Geekbeat.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And today's narration is a little bit different to our usual topics. It's all about the Bible and how it is confirmed by science. And I'm taking this from Biblical Antiquities, Book 3 by E. Raymond Capt. And he says, in these days, professors and teachers in colleges and universities, and even modernist clergy in church pulpits, are attacking the Bible as being scientifically unsound. This study will focus upon evidence from 8 areas of science to prove that the Bible is scientifically true. Number 1. The Bible is confirmed by the science of astronomy. And we will present 10 examples. Example 1. The Bible knew that the earth was round long before man had found this out on his own. One of the hardest things for earlier generations to understand was how the earth could have a spherical form, until Sir Isaac Newton had shown that what we call weight was simply a manifestation of the attraction existing between the earth and the heavenly bodies in its vicinity. It seemed to be against reason that the earth should be a sphere, and that the people and objects on its underside would not drop off. But according to the Bible, the earth is round. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 27, written around 1000 BC, reads, "He, God, set a compass, circle, upon the face of the depth." And in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 22, written around 700 BC, we read, "It is He, God, that sitteth upon the circle of the earth." Example number 2. The Bible knew that the earth was suspended in space. Copernicus was the first scientist to discover this fact, but many centuries before he was born, the Bible not only taught that the earth was round, but that it hung in space. All mankind, down to the year 1475 AD, believed that the earth rested upon some solid foundation. However, Job wrote in 1500 BC, in Job chapter 26, verse 7, "He hangeth the earth upon nothing." Example number 3. The Bible knew that the earth rotates. This is clearly implied in Genesis chapter 1, where the days are described as succeeding one another, each day consisting of evening and morning, and day and night. This regular succession of day and night, and light and darkness, can only be explained by the earth's rotation on its axis. Jesus also clearly stated that when he returns, it will be night in one place and daylight in another. Example number 4. The Bible knew that the moon is smaller than the earth, and that it shines by reflected light. The ancients insisted that the moon was much larger than the earth or sun, and that it shone by its own light. But in Genesis chapter 1, verse 16, the Bible states, "He made the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night." As to the light of the moon, we read in Job chapter 25, verse 5, "Behold even to the moon, and it shineth not." Example number 5. The Bible knew that the stars are innumerable. Ptolemy, in 200 AD, said that there were just 1,026 stars. Galileo was the first scientist to teach that the stars were innumerable. The Bible, however, long before Galileo knew this as a fact. Moses wrote the words of God in Genesis chapter 15, verse 5. "Look now towards heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them." The Bible was correct on this subject in an age when all the scholars of the world were ignorant of this scientific fact. Example number 6. The Bible knew of the great empty space in the north. After the invention of the telescope, it was discovered that in the northern hemisphere, there was a great empty space with a single star. In all other parts of the heavens, there were countless millions, but there were none in this great northern space. This was counted as another remarkable scientific fact. But listen to what Job wrote in Job chapter 26, verse 7. He, God, stretcheth out the north over the empty place. Thus we find that the Bible knew this great scientific fact fully 3,000 years before man discovered it. Example number 7. The Bible knew that the Pleiades constellation forms a centre of gravity in our galaxy. For years, scholars have known that the meaning of the word Pleiades, Chima in Hebrew, means an axle, a body that moves around and turns other bodies with it. But the true significance of this name has only lately been comprehended. Only in modern times was it discovered that Alcyone, the brightest star in the Pleiades, is the center of gravity of our galaxy. Furthermore, our galaxy is turning around Alcyone at the rate of 1 million miles a day, but in an orbit that requires many thousands of years to complete. This, then, explains why the Bible calls the Pleiades the pivot or axle. Job wrote in the book of Job, chapter 38, verse 31, what God told him. Canst thou bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? The Bible knew of this wonderful scientific fact thousands of years before any man discovered it. Example number 8. The Bible knew that light could give forth a musical sound. Modern science has perfected a radio apparatus that transforms light into sound. It is found that artificial light makes only a static sound. Experiments were then made with the light from stars, which resulted in a startling discovery. A beautiful sound, like a musical spinning top, was produced by the light vibrations from a star. Other stars were tried. It was found that each of them produced a different tone, but with no disharmony among them. In Psalms chapter 19, verses 1-6, we find that God's word speaks of the stars and the firmament having a voice, and being able to be heard in a sound of rejoicing or singing. The psalmist wrote in Psalm chapter 65, verse 8, They also that dwell in the uttermost parts are afraid at thy tokens or signs. Thou makest the outgoings, radiations of life, of the morning and evening to rejoice. In Job chapter 38, verse 7, the Lord asks Job where he was when the morning stars sang together. When we read this a few years ago, we thought of it as highly figurative language with no scientific meaning, but now we realize it contains the latest scientific discoveries. The subject of light radiation is closely related to the subject of radio waves. In Isaiah chapter 24, verse 16, we read, From the uttermost part of the earth have we heard songs. This refers to the present day. Example 9. The Bible knew that the sun was the center of the solar system. Up to the time of Copernicus's discovery that the earth revolved around the sun, it was commonly believed that the sun revolved around the earth. In the Bible, the truth was known in 1500 BC. However, only for the past 200 years or more have astronomers taught that the sun is the center of the solar system. Here is what Job wrote. Reading from the book of Job, chapter 38, verses 13 to 14, that it, that's the day spring or sun, might take hold of the ends of the earth, and it, the earth, not the sun, is turned as clay to the seal. Here is a clear declaration that the Earth is heliocentric. Example number 10. The Bible knew that the stars differ in kind. One of the more recent developments in astronomy has been the turning of attention to the spectroscopic analysis of the light coming from various heavenly bodies. It is now possible to determine both the composition of the stars and their speed of movement by calculating the time it takes their light to reach Earth. In other words, we have discovered the literal truth of St. Paul's statement. Reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 41, "One star differeth from another star in glory." And now we'll move on to the next section, where the Bible is confirmed by the science of physics. "In the beginning God," reads Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. God, the first great cause, existed before anything else in the universe. This appeals to man's reason, and is accepted by almost all leading scientists as the only satisfactory explanation of the ultimate source of life and matter. The words "created the heavens and earth" refer to the first creative act in the dateless past. Those words heralded the inception of the physical universe. "Darkness was upon the face of the deep." This suggests a cataclysm and the absence of light vibrations, a mystery not fully understood by Bible scholars. Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 23 to 26, and Isaiah chapter 24, verse 1, clearly indicate that the earth had undergone divine judgment. Geologically speaking, the face of the earth bears the marks of such a catastrophe. It is most interesting to read that the results of God's activity was light. Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 reads, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs, and for seasons, and for days and years." The apparent swing of the sun through the heavens, the tilting of the earth upon its axis for seasons, the spin of the earth upon its axis for days, and the circuit of the earth around the sun for years, is absolutely correct in every scientific detail. Thus, the Bible shows that the solar system was well organized. Not many people realize God made a path for the lightnings that we see in a thunderstorm. We read in the book of Job, chapter 38, verse 25, as Job is speaking of God, "Who hath divided a way for the lightning of thunder?" Professor C.B. Boyce, a distinguished London scientist, invented a special camera capable of taking a number of photographs in quick succession, so that prior to the brilliant flash of lightning, there is seen a dim, small, and almost invisible dart or arrow of electric particles shooting through the air at approximately 5,000 miles per second. These particles strike out a path for the real flash that follows a fraction of a second later, at a much greater rate of speed. All this occurs so quickly that only the single flash is visible to the naked eye. Did Job have a high-speed camera, or was his eye so quick and keen to have perceived it? No, this must have come through divine revelation. To us, this was a relatively new discovery. But like many other startling revelations of scientific facts, it is found in the Bible, the oldest book. Thus we see that Job knew a way was made for the lightning, and ascribed this to God the Creator. Now, after 35 centuries have rolled by, it has been found that Job was literally correct. A way is made by an electrified channel for the lightning of thunder. Later on in the book of Job, chapter 38, verse 35, we find God asking this question of Job, "Canst thou send lightnings, that they may go and say unto thee, Here we are?" In other words, the Lord asked Job if he could modulate the electromagnetic waves for the purpose of radio-telephonic communications. This refers to lightnings being sent under control. Lightning is made up of electrons, and these electrons are the medium through which radio and television work. These radio and television signals, which we receive as sound and vision, are carried by billions of tiny electrons travelling at the speed of light, over 186,000 miles per second. And now we will look at the Bible confirmed by the science of chemistry. Chemistry is the most exact science in the world. Its mathematical exactness and precision seem to coincide perfectly with Scripture. Not many years ago, our chemists discovered that for 11 substances to combine chemically, they must be measured and weighed exactly, as they will only combine in certain exact proportions. For instance, water can be formed only by mixing two gases, two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen, in these exact proportions. And what is true of water is true of every substance which God has created. Now Isaiah expresses this great scientific truth in his time around 700 BC, when he wrote in Isaiah chapter 40 verse 12, "Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance." This simply means that God measured and weighed every substance which he created. But how did Isaiah know this chemical secret, hundreds of years before any scientist discovered it? The vital importance of these measurements are only beginning to be realized this century. Again, we read in Psalms chapter 33, verse 7, "He," that is God, "gathereth the waters of the sea together as an heap. He layeth up the depth in storehouses." This means that in order to provide the extensive land surface we require, the portion of the earth's crust devoted to water is made up of deep ocean basins. So vast is the capacity of these ocean basins that the water which so exactly fills them is no less than 13 times the bulk of the land which rises above their surfaces. How these immense ocean basins were formed and filled is one of the most perplexing problems of science. Geologists theorize how Earth's plates in movement form mountains both on the land surface and in the oceans, how continents rise and fall underwater, and how vast periods of time are required to accomplish this. But in reality, Dr. Wallace, a noted scientist, wrote in perplexity, "How the adjustments occurred, it is difficult to imagine. Yet the adjustments stare us in the face." Next, we will find the Bible confirmed by the science of meteorology. And we have five examples to present here. Number one, the Bible knew the truth about winds and rain. Men did not discover that the winds had regular circuits and that rain clouds were only evaporated water until Galileo's time, 1630 AD. But written around 900 BC, the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verses 6 to 7, states, "The wind goeth towards the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again." In this scripture, we have two great scientific facts. One, the winds have regular circuits. And two, the rain clouds are composed of evaporated water. Water that, after having fallen from the clouds to the earth, has to return again to the clouds. Example number two, the Bible knew the truth about light. Fully 3,000 years before any scientist knew that light could not dwell in any one place, we read in the book of Job, chapter 38, verse 19, "Where is the way where light dwelleth?" Note, it does not say, "Where is the place where light dwelleth?" This would have been scientifically wrong. As light travels at the rate of 186,500 miles per second, and so could not possibly dwell in any one place. Example number 3. The Bible knew the truth about the tides. The tides of the sea are due to the differing attractions of the sun and the moon. This fact is noted in the Bible, when Job in chapter 26 verse 10 wrote, "He hath compassed the waters with bounds, until the day and night come to an end." Here Job revealed something he had never seen, and which was unknown in his day. Example number 4. The Bible knew about the planet's internal fires. In his book, The Deluge, History or Myth, Professor L.T. Townsend wrote, "The world's inhabitants are living on a crust of Earth estimated at from 50 to 150 miles in thickness. Under this crust are possibly 7,950 miles of matter that is plastic and would be molten as the iron that glows in a foundry, having too a heat that can quickly melt the most refractory metals yet discovered. Such is the raft or pontoon bridge humanity is standing on, and such the molten matter beneath their feet. This crust, skimming these internal fires, has no assured stability." This is a comparatively recent statement. Yet hear Job again in chapter 28, verse 5. "As for the earth, out of it cometh bread, and under it is turned up, as it were, fire." Example number 5. The Bible knew the value of dust and atmosphere. According to Isaiah chapter 40 verse 12, God has comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure. And the book of Proverbs chapter 8 verse 26 adds, "While as yet he had not made the highest part of the dust of the world." If there were no dust in the air to cause reflection, everything not in the direct path of the sun's rays would be in total darkness, except in special circumstances. In other words, the inside of all houses would be in pitch darkness, even at noonday. The atmosphere acts as a great reservoir and distributor of the sun's heat. A world, however, appreciably smaller than our own world, would only be able to retain a proportionally less dense atmosphere, and what are mountaintop conditions with us would be sea level conditions on it. It has been calculated that if the Earth were 7,220 miles in diameter instead of 8,000 miles, almost the whole of it would be reduced to a snowy and ice-bound wasteland. Results would be even more dramatic if the Earth were slightly bigger than it is. The denser atmosphere would certainly not suit our present breathing apparatus, and the increase in atmosphere would probably convert the Earth into an intolerable hothouse. Next, the Bible is confirmed by the science of botany. More than 250 plants, flowers, and shrubs are mentioned and described in the Old Testament alone. Botanists, themselves being the judges, claim that the Bible is flawless, botanically speaking. Men like Plato and Aristotle were among the early ancient botanists. Their works today are curious lists of botanical errors. For centuries, botanists classified plants by the Linnean system, that is, by the flowers. That system was discarded long ago, and plants are now classified by seeds. In other words, we have advanced in 4,000 years, as far as Moses, who classified after that method. Make a note to read the first and second chapters of Genesis. Next, the Bible is confirmed by the science of zoology. For centuries, scientists held the view that the vulture scented the carrion from afar. However, the Bible states that the vulture discovers its prey by sight and not by scent. Reading in the book of Job, chapter 28, verse 7, "Which no fowl knoweth, and which the vulture's eye hath not seen." Scoffers laughed at Job's so-called error for years, but now we know that the eye of the vulture is as a powerful telescope. All animals are found to be correctly and scientifically described in the Bible. Next, the Bible is confirmed by the science of anthropology. The evolutionists deny the direct creation of Adam, as taught in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. According to their theory, Adam was evolved from a lower animal kingdom. As such, he would be just the first stage above the brute mentality, and therefore could not possibly have sufficient ability to give names to all the animals of the earth as they passed before him. Yet Genesis chapter 2 verse 20 tells us that Adam did this very thing. Next, the Bible is confirmed by the science of medicine. William Harvey, in 1650 AD, discovered the circulation of the blood. His conclusion constituted one of the greatest finds of modern times, namely that the life of the flesh is in the blood. Now read the book of Leviticus chapter 17 verse 11, written around 1400 BC. "For the life of the flesh is in the blood." We have but touched on the scientific accuracy of the scriptures. One might ask, how is it that the Bible is found to be right on so many scientific features of our earth and universe, thousands of years before scholars discovered such features? The answer is simple. The author of the Bible is the author of the universe. And I think I'm going to throw an extra one in here as well. It's an explanation of the extra long day that supposedly happened while Joshua was having a battle in the Old Testament. Apparently the sun stood still, and a lot of people today mock this and say it couldn't possibly have happened. Reading from Joshua chapter 10 verses 13 to 14, "Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and hasted not to go down about a whole day." Now the account of Joshua's long day, as given in the scriptures, has long been the subject of unceasing attacks by atheists and unbelievers. They reason that in order to produce the long day and fulfill the conditions described by Joshua, the earth would have to stop its spinning. This would have been disastrous, as the earth turns on its axis at the rate of about 1,000 miles per hour. To stop that turning would bring about chaos. All the oceans of the world would rise in a wall, a mile high, continuing in a giant 1,000-mile-an-hour flood, sweeping all surface structures before it. And coincidentally, the planet would fly to pieces. In the year 1890, Professor C. A. L. Totten demonstrated by astronomical calculations that the biblical historical account of Joshua's long day would have been possible. There could have been a delay of 23 and a half hours between the time when a conjunction of the sun and moon was to take place and its completion. He found that this event was timed to occur when Joshua was engaged in battle and was not completed until the following day. And further, this could occur without affecting in any degree the revolution of the earth on its axis. When Joshua asked the Lord's help to assure victory over his enemies, the response to his request required a stupendous astronomical miracle. The intricacies of timing, in connection with the movements of heavenly bodies involved in producing the long day in Joshua's generation, are beyond human conception. It was at the very height of the Battle of Beth Horon that the great stones fell from heaven. Naturally, this was no ordinary hail, but meteoric matter, indicating that the Earth's path was being crossed by a celestial visitor from whence the great stones were coming. Let us contemplate for a moment the magnitude of the advanced planning involved to bring that stellar mass into close proximity to the Earth at that precise moment that the battle was being fought, and then shower only that part of the battlefield occupied by Israel's enemies. Countless eons before, perhaps millions of eons, this mass of meteoric matter was sent on its course from outer space, timed to arrive centuries later in our solar system, on a specific day, at a given hour, and at the exact spot where Joshua was at war with his enemies. The precision of timing that Almighty God built into the very mechanism of his universe, the precise movements of the stars, planets, and galaxies, as well as the speeding asteroids, comets, and other stellar phenomena, is inconceivable to the mind of man. It is not the purpose of this study to say we know exactly how the long delay happened, but to show the possibility of the long day occurring without affecting the turning of the Earth upon its axis. It is a law of physics that every force acts independently of every other force. While the Earth is spinning, a force which is independent of the force causing the spin could be applied, affecting the polar regions, causing the Earth to turn over upon a second axis, independent of the polar axis of the Earth, without affecting in any degree its original spinning. This can be illustrated by a spinning top or gyroscope, which can be turned over without affecting its spinning. If a comet or celestial body passed close enough to the Earth to set up a powerful field of force, it could cause the North Pole to make a complete circle, or one revolution, returning to its former position, while the Earth continued to spin on its axis. At the same time, through the new motion given to the poles, it could keep a given point on Earth directly under the Sun for the duration of this turnover. This being the case, the Sun would remain in an apparently stationary position over the point whereupon the Earth, the new axis, would be established, caused by the turning of the poles. This relative position would be maintained as long as the ratio of turning given to the poles was such that it compensated for the surface movement at a given point directly under the Sun. We know that from the account given by Joshua, the Sun and the Moon were about to go into conjunction. The Moon would thus be in line with the temporary new axis as the poles made one complete revolution. The field of force which is responsible for holding the axis of the Earth in its present position could have been momentarily interfered with by the close approach of a comet or other celestial body composed of a highly magnetic ore. This body could have induced a secondary field of force acting upon the Earth, which is itself a magnet, much as a magnetic impulse acts upon the armature of a motor, causing it to turn. The influence thus exerted upon the Earth by a new field of force would have none of the evil effects of a direct contact between a celestial visitor and the Earth, but it would nevertheless exert a tremendous pull upon it. The fact that a spectacular meteoric shower preceded the long day clearly indicates that such a heavenly visitor did graze the Earth's surface as it sped through the heavens in its path around the Sun. During the long day, an inhabitant living at either pole of the Earth would have witnessed an unusual sight. The rotation of the stars would change as the heavens and star groupings would come into view, until at the end of the 23.5 hours, the stars would again be seen as they have for centuries, appearing above the poles. Later, an added adjustment seems to have been made. Reading from Isaiah chapter 38, verses 7-8. "And this shall be a sign unto thee from the Lord, that the Lord will do this thing that he hath spoken. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees, which is gone down in the sundial of Ahaz, 10 degrees backwards. So the sun returned 10 degrees, by which degrees it was gone down. The dial of Ahaz added 2/3 of an hour, and when added to the 23 1/3 hours, equals exactly 24 hours of daylight added to the calendar. Only now are we beginning to obtain a glimpse of the complex nature of the orderly interlocking pattern governing what appears on the surface to be generally haphazard and sometimes chaotic. The mastermind of God is guiding, directing, and bringing to fruition every action in its proper place. The very magnitude of his overall design is beyond comprehension. Joshua's long day supplies a concrete example of our infinitely wise Creator, who describes himself by asking the challenging multiple question in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 12. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance?
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.